Hey, you. With a rhinestone dog collar, between us dogs, I just convinced my human to upgrade to a new home with a 1,200-square-foot bathroom. I think she called it a yard. With Wells Fargo's 3% down mortgage option, my human realized a new home was within reach. And I only gave her puppy eyes once. Get your human to talk to a mortgage consultant or learn more at wellsfargo.com/woof.
Wells Fargo Home Mortgage. Down payments as low as 3% on a fixed-rate loan require mortgage insurance. Ask a home mortgage consultant about loan requirements. Wells Fargo Home Mortgage is a division of Wells Fargo Bank N.A. Equal housing lender. NMLS ID 399801.
Welcome to Going Shamanic. My name is Jen Ingrassio, and my medicine name is Snowhawk. And I'm your host today with producer of Page Media, Marielle Smith, managing things in the background.
So to start out our show today on body wisdom, I came across a book that I had read a couple of years ago and a chapter that specifically stood out for me on the body. It's a quote from the book, The Hidden Spirituality of Men, 10 Metaphors to Awaken the Sacred Masculine by Matthew Fox. Quote, some religions have considered the body fallen as sinful and separate from God. Other philosophies characterize our bodies as prisons of consciousness from which it is impossible to escape. Our bodies link directly to Father Sky, and science has now demonstrated that our bodies are formed from the stuff of stars. 60% of the atoms of our bodies are hydrogen and helium atoms, which were birthed in the original fireball 13.7 billion years ago. The other 40% of our body's atoms were birthed in a supernova explosions about 5 billion years ago. We are made of ancient stuff, yet it has come together to fashion the workable, beautiful, usable instrument that is our body. Consider, we couldn't run, jump, swim, walk, skate, climb, embrace, kiss, wrestle, make love, eat, sing, dance, paint, sleep, write, or think without our body. All we do is with our body, and that includes pray, communicate with the divine, body and soul, body and consciousness go hand in glove. Our bodies are indeed wild. They are wild in their design and wild in their execution. That is, they accomplish wild things together with the wild imaginations we carry inside of us. They also seek peace and repose. The body does not require the intercession of some conscious intellect to make it breathe, to keep the heart beating. It is, to a great extent, self-regulating. It's a life of its own. Our bodies are instruments of our souls, and they go where our souls ask them to go. They dance when our souls feel like dancing, and they mourn when our souls feel like grieving. They skip lightly when our souls are uplifted. Humans are animals, and talking about our bodies means recognizing and acknowledging our connection to the animal world. To lose our bodiliness is to lose our humanity and our sense of community. As humans, we are united by our bodies. We all have bodies in common. Many spiritual traditions honor the body as a temple. Recently, I participated in a Lakota sweat lodge in which the Lakota elder instructed us to treat our bodies as if they were temples. Our bodies are where the cosmos and our conscious self meet, for, as we noted, our bodies contain atoms from the cosmos itself. Our bodies also contain the DNA of our ancestors, all of them. So each one is a meeting place for the entire human race. Do our bodies take us into the Mandela universe of the cosmos? Well, of course they do. We think and feel with our bodies. We imagine and dream with our bodies. We eat, and when we do, we are eating the cosmos, eating the plants that have eaten the sun. Food is holy. What we call food was once alive as plant, animal, or star, and it allows us to live, and for this reason, saying grace is so universal and so ancient a practice all over the world. We create new life with our bodies, and we literally take our bodies into space. Surely all this qualifies as taking us out of our little cells into the big universe. considering this, we can treat everything we do as a living and ongoing meditation on our connection with the cosmos. By keeping ourselves healthy, we're actively and directly keeping the universe healthy. It also follows that we're meant to admire the beauty of our bodies, and everyone's body is beautiful. Everyone's body is sacred. Community is enhanced by beauty, and beauty calls us to admire it. As a culture, the United States is obsessed with how bodies look, but still does not take very good care of them. What and how we eat is an essential way to love our bodies and cherish these cosmic temples. But there is a companion activity, exercise. When we exercise out of vanity, we're not so much honoring our body as trying to control it, to shape it in an attractive way to gain admiration for our ego. However, like eating, exercise can become more if we want it to, a prayer itself, an act of praise for the marvel-filled bodies we have been blessed with. When our intention is to honor the temple of our body, exercise can become a profound experience. The physical effort becomes a generous gift to God, to our ancestors and our descendants. For we praise them all by honoring the gift of our bodies and staying healthy. When approached in this way, eating and exercise become a form of living prayer. Unquote. Our guest today is shamanic coach and practitioner Michaela Thunder Owl, and we're very blessed to have her. I've known her for many years, and I'm really looking forward to this interview to learn more about her work and her workshops. Hello, Michaela. Welcome.
Hello, Jen. How are you?
Good. It's nice to have you.
It's lovely to be here and lovely to be here with you.
Mm-hmm. What's your initial response to that Matthew Fox intro?
Well, that has so much. That is just so rich. And it was quite interesting because there were quite a few pieces in there that we had gone through when we actually did our workshop in the spring. Mm. And it's, you know, that the calling to us about our heritage, you know, not only in terms of our ancestors who stand behind us, but also how we do come from the stars and how we come from the earth. And when we look at, you know, whether it's on an atomic level or we look a little bit higher than that, we just see how we are a part and parcel of this amazing tapestry, right? Mm. And this is really something that, you know, our general mainstream culture has not allowed us really to have that birthright. And so it's really something important for people to hear these kinds of messages that are so different from the kinds of messages that they get every day, which is really about being quite separate from the body and, you know, looking at the body in a very specific way that never lets us really be connected and in our bodies. So
yeah,
it was a wonderful long quote.
It seems sometimes like there are all these forces really that are, sometimes it seems like they're working very purposely to keep people disconnected from their bodies as far back as, you know, thousands of years ago when you look at when the mind started being taken away from the body in some ways, that connection started being taken away. How do you see that taking place in our culture, or do you see that way? Do you see that it's a purposeful thing or something that we've inherited?
You know, I think it's absolutely purposeful. Because I think that if we were really strongly connected with our bodies, we would be so strongly connected with the wisdom of our bodies. We would not be so easily ruled. We would not be so easily controlled. We'd not be so easily fed the diet of the mainstream. So I think that the disconnection from the body is a very purposeful. And I'm not saying people are, sitting around saying, okay, we've got to push this message, you know, that you need to be separate from your body. But I think it's just part and parcel of having a society that is based more on hierarchy than it is on community.
Yeah, he makes he makes the connection, Matthew Fox, between community and our bodies. And it seems like everywhere I travel in the world, or, you know, and I've traveled in around Africa and Europe, and there are some cultures that are just, it seems like they haven't lost the connection to their bodies like we seem to have in Western culture. And so I start seeing all these patterns like anorexia and bulimia and all these illnesses that, although they might still happen in other countries, they don't seem as much a problem as they are in the Western world.
Yeah, and I think in a way, if you look at their communities, you're going to see more of a community-minded spirit there as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
People still dance and sing and celebrate with food, those kinds of...
They celebrate with food. They mm-hmm. know that their health is connected to the health of the community. They don't see themselves as a absolute separate individual. You know, that's something that's really part of the Western world model, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the denigration of the body is, you know, as long as we can go back if we want to look at philosophy, you know, because it's the part of us, you know, whether you believe that the soul survives or not, but we know for sure that the body dies.
Mm-hmm.
And there is this, it seems like a very deep fear of the body because of that. And it could be that that is really what's underpinning, you know, the separation from the body, right?
And on the other side, we don't get to experience really living unless we're in our body. So it's a bit of a, it seems to be a bit of a dichotomy that is going on in today's world.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and as many of us have been taught by our teachers, you know, that the only way that we can evolve is by being in a body.
Mm-hmm.
We can't really do that on the level of spirit. Like, if we're just spirits, we can't quite do it. We need to actually be on this earth plane and in this body to really move in that evolutionary way.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right, it is absolutely vital, but I don't know, I think about, you know, slightly older generations than I am, and I can see how women live their whole lives never feeling truly at home in their bodies,
mm-hmm.
and therefore never truly connecting with their with the wisdom and the power that they carry.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so you created a Woman of Substance workshop, yes?
Yes.
Is that what it's called, yeah?
It is.
And so some of the stuff that you're talking about, it seems like, did this workshop come out of some of those things that you were noticing in your community, among the women in your community or the people that you serve? Because you work with people as a shamanic coach and practitioner a lot, yeah?
Absolutely.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly noticed it, and I have noticed it for a long time. I mean, my academic background is in some part in feminist theory, so certainly, you know, even when I was in my 20s, I, you know, became aware of what was happening, you know, between the media and advertising and the diet industry, and, you know, seemingly as women were becoming more and more liberated, they were becoming more and more, they were themselves becoming the controller,
mm-hmm.
right? And in this specific kind of way. But I, you know, truth be known, and I think this is, you know, about, it's probably correct with many people's work, is the work comes out of your own experience too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had had enough. I had had enough with either hating my whole body or hating parts of my body. And even though my body has changed a lot since I was 20, you know, I had to work through some real sorrow that I felt about how I had treated myself with that hatred. And it was that, partially through, you know, healing that part of myself, that I wanted to share that with other women. Because, you know, some of the teachers have told us that, you know, this is, it wasn't just the beginning of the fifth world when December 21st came around last year, but it was also the beginning of the 13,000 years of the matriarchy, the return of the matriarchy. And we know that it's in our power, and it may be actually in our responsibility to be the change makers. But we can only do that if we start to get rid of the things that disconnect us from our bodies.
And not just women, I mean, also men. Just for the male listeners out there, for everybody to know that we have these we have a masculine and feminine aspect in ourselves, whether we're in a female body or a male body or a transgendered body.
Absolutely.
And yeah, so it really does affect all of us. It's about coming back into balance with our whole selves and our bodies, whatever body it is that we are living in, for
yeah.
sure. Yeah.
Because we know, too, from just even listening to the media, that many men have body issues now as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. This is not something that is restricted just to women, nor are women the only holders of the wisdom and the power. I mean, you know, we say from within shamanism that, you know, men have spirit wombs too, right? And the womb is the area where we hold our power and where we hold our wisdom. And we need access to that. But we can only have access if we're not hating our bodies, right?
Mm-hmm.
We need
and if we're living in our bodies more and not strictly in our minds.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you go about healing some of the things with your own body? Like, how did you use shamanic tools to start healing some of those pieces?
Well, you know, I can't say that I did it quite as programmatically as the workshop then sort of became, but I started by actually working with an altar. And it was first to begin to even have an image of, you know, who are the women of substance that I can find. I found some in my own lineage. I found some, you know, amongst the many women who have been, you know, really powerful women in our culture, because it's not like we haven't had those women, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to put those images on my altar because I knew that if I continued to just be fed by what mainstream culture feeds me, I wasn't going to be able to shift it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we're such a visual culture that I needed to feed my vision in a different way. And so I started with some of those images just by looking at them. And then I started to realize that there's something in our looking that is very, I call it sort of everyday seeing, and I contrast it with what I call soft eyes. And I started to realize that when I looked at my body, I was always looking at parts of my body, almost like I was, you know, I could detach my legs from the rest of my body or my arms or whatever, right? So I put a mirror on my altar, and I just started to, with soft eyes, so, you know, doing the soft focus, just looking at the whole shape of my body. And it was then that I started to see how there was a real beauty there that I didn't need to convince myself about.
Mm.
Right? And so those were some of the first powerful pieces where I fed myself in a way that was contra to what mainstream culture feeds me. Certainly,
and,
Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. I was just going to say within that, within the switching, almost like switching paradigms, not seeing your body in the way that we're always told to see our bodies, whether we're women or men in the media, was there a new, almost like criteria or a new set of criteria or things you were looking for that helped you to see yourself in a different way, or did that just arise from the process?
I don't think I was trying to see something different, but what I was trying to do was to see differently and see in a more receptive way, so that I could see what would come out of that. Because when we use that softer gaze, it's a much wider angle. It's like we take in much more of the world. It's like when I look at myself in the mirror that way, I don't just see my thigh, right? And I don't just see my body, but I see my body in space. And it was that kind of vision that I think started to make me feel somehow connected and more at home and not just in my mind.
I had one of those moments actually too when I was I worked on healing an addiction to food that I'd had for a lot of my life a couple of years ago, and one of the first exercises that one of our teachers had me do was to look at myself in the mirror naked every day. And if just to look with that receptive way, and so stripping off all my clothes and standing there. And I remember the first time I did it, I cried the whole time. And it was one of the hardest things that I, because, you know, I looked at myself in the mirror all the time, right?
Right.
You know, you come out of the shower, you're getting ready, and I think I didn't realize the extent of my negative dialogue until I started doing that exercise. And then it was like, well, no wonder I'm having some of these issues, because here's my body perfectly functional in the sense that it's doing its job. It's housing my spirit. It's helping me move from one place to another. It's, it's an exquisite instrument, really.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, all I was seeing was all these things that I didn't like about it. And it wasn't even based on, when I really looked at it, it wasn't even based on my own criteria for what a beautiful body is. It was based on all these things that I had just absorbed from my culture, like my culture of origin, but also the culture, the predominant culture that I'm living in here in North America. So that was, I get what you say, because it's not really something you can qualify or quantify until you actually do the exercise and just hang in there with yourself and start to unhook some of those tapes. And what I would do was every time I had a negative thought or a critical thought, I would just let it go or cut it away from me in my mind's eye and just keep looking. And over time, it got easier, but the beginning was for sure excruciating, but also enlightening.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember very similar kind of ceremony for a slightly different purpose, and I remember just being absolutely terrified that I would have to look at myself in this way, because there were others who were witnessing me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very hard. And I certainly wouldn't recommend necessarily that that's the way one needs to do it, but it is, there's kind of a hump that we have to get over. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, otherwise we're going to be in this kind of weird bondage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we touched on it a little bit, but what are some of the ways, the biggest ways that you see men and women that come to see you not honoring their bodies, and how do you work with those folks when they come to you?
I can't say that I've had somebody who's come to me and that part of their intent has been to actually work with their body.
Mm.
So I can certainly see things in how people hold themselves and how they treat themselves and where self-care is on their list of priorities. But, you know, I don't impose my agenda on a client. So I have not actually had somebody who comes to me who says, you know, I want to work on my relationship to my body.
Mm-hmm.
It's through the workshop that I've done it, where I've made that call, in a sense, out there to the public and then worked with those who feel ready to work with this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that, you know, in that way, one of the most important things has actually been to become aware of that negative inner dialogue that is constantly not only supporting the body hatred, but is constantly reinscribing it so that it is, it's always like, it's like you're making your future every moment that you're thinking this way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so looking at and really starting to attend to that negative inner talk, especially around the body, is absolutely important because, you know, many of us are, we're the people of the North, we're the people of the mind, and our mind is very strong. And, you know, that's cuts both ways, right? It's our strength, but it's also our weakness because we tend to live there mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And identify so strongly with that mind.
And then, of course, that also starts to program our bodies and how our bodies respond.
Absolutely.
And the just the amount of stress, I think, that people live in, a lot of it comes from the those negative patterns that are going on in their
yeah.
in their minds.
Yeah.
And learning how to unhook from those patterns also has a direct effect on what the body does.
Absolutely.
Lots more relaxation.
Yeah. Even just becoming aware of it starts to build, for someone who hasn't done that kind of work, starts to build a sense of a self that is other than that inner dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Because until somebody points it out to us, we think we are that inner dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really our true self, right? So even though it seems, you know, maybe not that powerful as a technique, it's very, very powerful because people start to exercise, in a sense, the muscle of their true self by being the observer of this talk.
Mm.
And so I always, you know, when I would give that as, a, let's say, a piece of self-care in the intervening times between the times we met, you know, I would say, okay, it's not about necessarily engaging with it. You don't have to necessarily fight it. You know, you don't need to put force behind it. Just observe. And sure, if you're feeling something, if you're feeling, you know, some anguish or some tears or whatever, something is moving, certainly breathe through that and acknowledge that. But it's not about, you know, arming yourself and then fighting that inner dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Just
yeah, really
sometimes
about
it causes more resistance sometimes that way, but also it brings a harshness to the
yes.
process that doesn't need to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So can you describe a little bit about the Women of Substance Workshop, Michaela? Like what you, what kinds of things, I know you probably can't reveal all of it, but what kinds of things do, first of all, what's the intent of the workshop, and then what kinds of things, what shamanic tools do you use in your work with women?
Well, the intent is to really bring into sharp relief one's relationship with one's body. Because even at the end of those 8 sessions, some women have not been ready to fully love and embrace their bodies. So, but to even to see that, right, and even to start seeing some glimmers of a different kind of relation can be very powerful.
Mm.
So we did all kinds of things. We did some drum journeys where we journeyed to actually meet who was our woman of substance. Who could we be as a woman of substance? And we sort of, we spoke to ourselves in the future in a way.
Mm.
And that was one of the very first things we did. And I, you know, some of these women had never even journeyed before. And it was a powerful experience for all of them. And it was so interesting at how different it was, like how different the women showed up and the different messages that those women shared with the women who were journeying. We also did quite a bit of ceremony. So even when we did that inner dialogue stuff, wasn't really presented as a lesson, but was instead presented as a mesa working. So as a group, we worked together around a mesa in order to really start to look at what's going on in my mind.
Hmm.
What's the kind of general talk that's happening all the time? And, of course, we use the medicine wheel when we're doing that so that we can feel assured that we've covered enough of the field, that we've not left a big chunk out in some way. We...
I just wanted to just make clear for some of the listeners that might not know the lingo that a mesa is another name for an altar, which you can use. We talked about on the show before. You can use to communicate with spirit to find out information, answers to questions you have about something that you're working to heal. And then, of course, the medicine wheel. Can you describe a little bit about how the particular medicine wheel that we use in our tradition is laid out?
Do you mean like with what the energetics are in the different positions?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, sure. In the West is fire as the element, and the human aspect there is our spirit. So when we're in balance, we determine with our spirit. We make those important life decisions with our spirit if we're in balance. In the West, the element is earth. There, the human aspect is the physical body. And there, if we're in balance, we are actually holding and transforming energy with our bodies. We're making things happen with our bodies. We're not burning them out. That is an out-of-balance way. In the South, the element is water. And that's about our emotions. And our emotions need to flow. We want to give with our emotions. In the North is air. And the human aspect there is our mind. And when we're in balance, our mind is as clear as a gorgeous day. So the mind is receptive to ideas as opposed to being, you know, the one determining, which is really our big imbalance in this culture, right, is that we determine with our minds and we receive with our spirits rather than the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
So... We did for sure work even on those, like looking at those energetics, you know, because once we start to work on a little bit of balance in that, like watch out, where are we kind of holding our emotions rather than just letting them flow? Where are we giving with our bodies and experiencing burnout?
Mm-hmm.
Where are we determining with our minds and making really important decisions in our lives with our minds, you know, doing the pro and con list,
mm-hmm.
you know, or where are we just thinking that, you know, if I just sit on the pillow, my spirit is going to just receive,
mm-hmm.
right? Where we really need to be quite active with our spirits because we need to determine, you know, from our spirit, how it is that we're going to live, that, you know, today.
Mm-hmm. And then take action based on what the spirit says instead of what the mind tells us we should be doing.
See, the mind's not even supposed to be telling us anything. It's just supposed to be receiving.
It's doing the wrong function. Well, I wanted to take this opportunity again because we're live today, so just to invite callers to call in with questions or comments in relation to the theme. If you have questions for Michaela around body wisdom, please phone in. The number is 713-955-0582. Press 1 and then let us know that you're ready to talk with us. So I'm going to go back to Michaela now. You were just talking about some of the tools you use in the workshop. Thanks for explaining the medicine wheel to the folks listening.
Oh, you're welcome. I can get kind of impassioned about it.
Well, I think it's a great tool because, you know, I remember when I was first learning medicine wheels and they made so much sense to me because I could see, one of my teachers described it as if there's you can see where the wobble is, where you're out of balance when you look at a medicine wheel.
Right.
And so the goal is not to stay in perfect balance all the time because that's impossible, but to reduce the wobbles so that the imbalances are more like, you know, just small ripples and you can just make minor adjustments.
Right.
And keep adjusting to maintain as good a balance as you can, but that your whole world doesn't crash in one of the segments or two of the segments causing huge loss of crisis in your life, basically.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I remember the very first time that I received this teaching. And one of the simple things they said right off the bat, and actually I should back up a moment and say, you know, the center of the wheel is where our life force is.
Mm.
And that's one of the ways that it shows up is in our sexuality. But this is thought of in a much broader term than just, let's say, having sex, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's really our capacity to birth. And here I'm not just talking about women, but it's to birth, you know, not only children, but to birth new ideas, to birth paintings, to birth books, to birth journeys, to birth, you know, everything that we see in the world has been birthed. And that's what that center energy is about. So there's really five aspects. And I remember this very first lesson, which was, well, since there are five aspects and you want to think about the medicine wheel like a plate and it's spinning, well, you can really only spend about 20% of your energy in each of those areas.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did a self-inventory, I think I was about 95% in my mind and the other 5% spread around the other four places of the wheel. That was like an amazing lesson to just...
And a great visual, too.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. Sometimes it takes that kind of... That's what another thing I love about them is that things that are sometimes hard to see in ourselves, when all of a sudden I look at them on a medicine wheel, I'm like, oh, Jen, you know, no wonder, like,
right?
No wonder this part of your life is topsy-turvy. And, of course, the interesting thing is when we work in the center, then all of the spokes on the wheel travel more smoothly. So if we work on our life force energy and our creative expression, our sexuality and those kinds of things, which also makes so much sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so because the medicine wheel has been such a profound teacher, when I then work with individuals or with groups, and we're really trying to cover an area, so let's say inner dialogue, I feel quite confident that once we've gone around the wheel and we've looked at the different aspects in the different directions, and maybe there's, you know, eight directions at this point, you know, with the cardinals and the non-cardinals, I actually feel quite secure that we've covered all the major areas and we've not left something that's large and that's potentially going to hold up everything that we're trying to crumble or trying to loosen. There isn't this one big thing out hanging out there holding it all up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we I use it as a tool all the time, and it's that kind of holistic feeling that when you're considering all of the energetics of the medicine wheel that just give you, you know, in some ways the most comprehensive view that you can have. So
what are some of the changes that you've seen in the folks that have taken your workshop? You know, I know you can't go into details about certain things, but are there themes that you notice or shifts that you notice that women are able to make?
We ended this spring of workshop with deciding to add on a few more days to do an art project. And I invited each woman to come that first day of the art project to come dressed as a woman of power. And it was amazing to see how over this, you know, 4-month period, how they just carried themselves in their bodies differently. How they just seemed more rooted to the ground. How the energy just seemed to be lower in their body. So rather than, you know, it being so much up in the head, but being lower down in that womb space. That was one of the most sort of graphic changes I could see. But I also heard it in their love letters. One of the exercises was to write a love letter to your body. And while not each letter was a love letter, some of them were big apology letters, you know, you could see this tenderness beginning to develop in the way that they held their bodies. They didn't see them anymore as the thing to be dominated, you know, or the thing to be hated, or the thing to be pointed at and judged. They started to feel more at home in their bodies. And I mean, those were some of the bigger ways that one could see the changes. And you know, they wrote about the changes, too. And that's on my website there. I put some of the testimonials up there from that workshop.
Mm.
One
and
woman...
Can you say that website just online, just in case people want to come and find out more about you? Which she's
sure.
In Ontario, by the way, folks.
Yeah, it's www.spiritmedicine.ca. And I'm not on my computer right now, but there's a section called workshops. It might be underneath offerings, I think. And you'll see it. You'll see a write-up about the workshop there, and you'll see some testimonials underneath.
Oh, excellent.
That is if I haven't moved them. I've been working on my website a little bit. It could be that I moved them all to the testimonial page, I'm starting to think.
Well, that's okay. We'll just get people to
yeah.
that are interested. Now they have the info and they can go and check it out. I was on there last week, and it's a beautiful website with lots of really great information, actually, especially if you... Oh, Marielle just is writing to me in Google Docs saying, yes, they are under offerings.
Excellent.
So there you have it.
Yay for technology.
Mm-hmm. So we were going back talking about some of the changes. I sort of interrupted there. Go ahead,
yeah,
Michaela.
Yeah, I was just going to say that for one woman in particular, and I didn't find this out until she told somebody else, and then she came and told me. She said, we have a mutual friend, and she said, I was talking to her, and I was just saying to her how I just love my body now. And I could just see, like, the love in her body. I could hear the love in her voice. In a way, she was now, you know, as I might say, tickled pink, that she was in the temple that she was in. And as I say, not everyone gets there, you know, after 4 months. Some of us, that's going to be the journey that we're going to walk maybe our whole lifetime. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always been kind of struck by the mysteriousness of our journeys. But every woman, because I did do some, you know, intakes, at, not intakes, but some, I'm missing the word, some feedback forms at the end, every one of those women more than, let's say, tripled what they had initially felt about their bodies if they talked about it in a percentage way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's really, that's the work, though, right?
Yeah.
You know, and what whatever percentage people, it's, well, first of all, it's not a race, I guess, is one thing we could say about healing work. And, you know, for me, like personally, I started the healing work with my body in, I would say probably about 2003 is when I started, way before I started shamanic medicine. And I'm really grateful for my sexual Qigong teacher, actually, who's coming on the show in February to talk about sacred sexuality, because that course that I took with her was the beginning of seeing just how out of whack my relationship with my body was, and then led me to belly dancing, which gave me more insights.
Wow.
You know, like, it was kind of, it's kind of like, for me anyway, it's been this process. It hasn't been necessarily a, you know, one aha and I get it,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
But of course, when I look at my history, at my upbringing and also past life stuff that I've been able to uncover, it makes sense why my journey has been the way it is so far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's a worthwhile journey, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what I realized really was that I wasn't living.
Right.
I was going through the motions, but because I didn't have a good relationship in the West with my body and with the physical world, that I was going through experiences, but it was like I was only experiencing them with my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Or then I would experience them with my heart, but I had no body knowing about it. So there were all sorts of sensory sort of experiences that I was missing out on. Pleasure that,
right.
I was missing out on because I didn't have that connection to my body. Now, I mean, there are just simple things that I totally enjoy that I had no clue about in before, like drinking a cup of coffee in the sun is like one of the most, you know, I had that this today actually. There was sun coming in through the window and I took some time to drink my cup of coffee in between some things that I was doing, and I can actually rest in that now, whereas before it was like I'd make the coffee, I'd be doing a million things while I was drinking the coffee, I'd have no idea if the coffee tasted good or if it tasted crappy, if I had burnt it or, you know, all these things. So it is worthwhile work. I agree with you.
Well, and I think that what our you know, shared background in the medicine, you know, has always put, you know, quite high, is that we can learn through pleasure.
Mm.
We don't need to necessarily learn through pain.
Mm.
But if we can't be in our bodies, then that's lost to us, that learning through pleasure.
Mm.
And it makes perfect sense that people think they need to learn through pain.
Mm-hmm. And our bodies actually want the pleasure.
Absolutely,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they revel in the high vibration that you get from pleasure. And not, I think, you know, I've been reading Gabor Mate's book, When the Body Says No.
Ah.
And he says in there, the research is showing that, you know, in our culture, we're taught to be self-sacrificing, to put duty and role and responsibility above what our bodies are telling us.
Right.
So we don't do good self-care, and we put other people ahead of us as if that's a virtuous thing. But he says that that is actually what's causing the stress and disease. You know, people that have cancer, that's a resentment in the body from giving so much to others at our own expense. And it makes sense to me. It puts stress on the body because we're not taking care of it, and of course in the end you end up not being able to serve and give back to your communities anyway, because your body's not capable of doing that piece, really.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a very important thing to understand that we need to, you know, I remember being told the story of the mother lion, right? That the mother eats first, and when she has eaten her fill, that's when the cubs eat. Mm. Granted, the male eats first anyway, but in terms of, you know, the relation between the mother and the kids, right, is that the mother needs to feed herself, because if she doesn't, those cubs will not survive. Mm. It's a very different way of looking at things where you know, when I look out the window, or if I'm in a mall or if I'm in a restaurant and I see, you know, parents today, and I see how, you know, people run themselves, you know, into the ground doing what they think they need to do for their children to prosper. And I just, you know, I just wonder, you know, what kind of lesson are we teaching our kids when we do that? Mm-hmm. Right? We're teaching them to do that when they have their own kids.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then it gets carried on through the generations.
Yeah.
It was funny because I was on a walk today, and I know a lot of people that work in the trades and construction workers and do that really physical, hard work. And, you know, those jobs are quite demanding, and because of all the deadlines and stuff, people often push themselves past what they can physically do, so they end up hurting their bodies. And I was watching these roofers, and you know, they all come down for a break, and they're all smoking and drinking Coke. And I was thinking, that totally makes sense to me that people would go to self-medicating, because uh-huh. I'm sure their bodies are in a ton of pain.
Right.
And, you know, or marijuana smoking is also pretty common amongst construction workers. And nobody really talks about these kind of links or wants to make them very public. But to me, it makes a lot of sense that addictions would rise in a culture that denies the body pleasures and rest and balance.
Uh-huh.
For sure.
And feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think we tend to medicate ourselves because we don't want to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in our body that we're going to actually feel, whether it's anger or rage or sadness, you know. So if we medicate to not feel that, well, we also then don't feel great love and great tenderness. So,
yeah, it's a funny thing. You can't medicate out the pain without medicating out the things that you want to feel at the same
right.
time.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings us back again to how important it is to be connected as a body. Because all of that, what I call sort of like advanced, not warning system, but a kind of advanced system that is constantly telling you stuff about what's happening in your environment.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have any contact with that feeling in your body, you're missing out on a whole ton of information
mm-hmm.
that is coming through the body. To let
and
you know whether
the body doesn't lie either, right?
Yeah.
So, in a way, it's a stronger indicator than our minds, because our minds will always try to do the workaround, like, oh, you can do like 10 minutes of that, even though it's killing you and you're in pain. But our bodies will tell us very accurately when it's enough,
yeah,
and what we're doing is enough, and to either change our strategy or do something a bit differently.
Yes, and then we have, you know, the great work of having a disease being the teacher in our life,
mm-hmm.
where we're really, in a sense, brought to our knees, and we really have to do something now, or, you know, in some cases, stop doing something,
mm-hmm.
right, in order to find some way to balance.
And
but
sometimes it means going against what our families and friends want us to do, saying no.
Yeah.
And I think that's another place where people get a little bit snagged, because they want to please people, but it tends to then be at their own expense.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's, I would say, you know, kind of a particular women's issue, right? Because we're socialized to be, to please others.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, it can take can be a long time before we've put that one to bed, mm-hmm. before we realize that we really need to please ourselves, and not in a selfish way, but that, you know, once we understand that we're here, that we're this unique individual that has this absolutely unique gift that the world needs right now, we realize it's much more selfish when we don't actually actualize that gift.
Mm-hmm.
When we are not who we are meant to be. Right?
Yeah, because we can't see the overall plan, really. Like, and, you know, it was funny. Somebody told me one time when I was going through my healing, if you're over there living your, you know, fill in the blank, your mom's life, your sister's life, your partner's life, then who's over there living your life and living your life purpose, you know? And to me, that made, I don't know, a light bulb went off for me. It was like, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. Like, I'm the only one that can
right.
live my life. But the other thing is, I'm the one that has to live with the consequences of whatever it is that I do. And it's no different for anybody else around me.
Right.
So it gave me the impetus to start changing some things in my belief systems, which then I was able to do some different actions
uh-huh.
as well. So we have about 4 minutes in the show. What kinds of shamanic activities or tools, or, you know, what can you leave listeners with, or what do you want them to know about body wisdom?
Well, I guess we keep on saying it in slightly different ways throughout the whole hour, but, you know, the most important point, I think, is that if you want to somehow be in your power, somehow find your wisdom, that can only happen through rebuilding your connection to your body. Mm-hmm. And that to do that, you need to feed your body and your mind something else than what you've maybe been consuming from the mainstream culture. Maybe just do a media fast. Don't look at media for a while. It's quite interesting how that can produce a different kind of awareness in your life. And for those of you who are a little bit more inclined to work with, let's say, altars, I'd say start with an altar. Mm-hmm. Find a figure of a, whether it's a man or a woman, that is to you, typifies what strength and wisdom is. Put that on your altar.
Mm-hmm.
Then put a mirror on your altar. And then if you don't know how to do this soft gaze, put a piece of muslin, or some, like a, I almost want to say like a very holy drape over it, some kind of fabric, so that it also gives that kind of soft view. And begin to just look at yourself. You know, we did this exercise of just listing all the things that our bodies allowed us to do. You know, all these various ways we have to really start to see how amazing we are, how amazingly our body serves us, you know, whether it's to hold our child or to caress our lover or to pick flowers or to plant seeds in the ground. It's, you know, it's not just that our body deserves to be loved. We deserve to be whole. And we deserve to feel at home.
Well, Michaela Thunder Owl, thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure.
Will you come back?
Absolutely.
Great.
Thank you very much, Jen. Okay.
And thanks to all the listeners out there, to Marielle, the producer of Page Media Project, or in this show that works in the background. Thanks for being with us, and gratitude to all of you. I'm going to be taking holidays during December, so this is our last show of 2013. I want to wish you all a happy solstice, and happy holidays, no matter what traditions you are out there celebrating. And join us again in January, where we'll explore the topic of shamanic gifts of attention deficit disorder. Thanks again. Bye for now, everyone.
Motivation with Amazon Music.
You're still in bed? Didn't you go running?
Oh, I overslept. I'll go tomorrow.
I'm getting in the shower.
Alexa, set an alarm for 5 a.m. tomorrow to hard rock music.
Okay, I'm up.
The right song exactly when you need it. Amazon Music, the simplest way to listen to the music you love. New customers start your 30-day free trial at amazonmusic.com. Renews automatically, cancel anytime.